I think we've reached the reckoning. What we're actually waiting for is some sort of change or some sort of response to it. I think people are fed up. I think people are sick of the establishment, you know, basically covering these things up or just saying, don't worry about it, and they want to see real action. And that's where we always get stuck. It's a really uncomfortable conversation to have, but it's not one that we should shy away from just because it's uncomfortable. And I think that's what really links all of the books together that we'll be talking about on the weekend is that we have uncomfortable conversations about how our politics got here, and now it's time that we work out how we find our way through this and emerge with hopefully a better system, not just for women, not just for the youth, but for everybody, because it's absolutely needed.
Has a change of government last year helped that cause, or are we still, as boots on the ground in Canberra and other women within Parliament and large corporations, are you still coming against the same prejudice and still fighting the same battles that you've been fighting for 50 plus years and nothing ever seems to really change?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Just because there is a new change of government doesn't mean everything's fixed. And in fact, it probably takes attention and spotlight away from the issue because people think, oh, well, the people who were in charge then are gone. Surely things are better because we have a new government. But like, what has changed? What has materially changed in Australia's policy and the way that we talk about these things and in offering up solutions? We still haven't seen that change. We're still seeing at least one woman a week being killed by her partner. We're still having people jumping up and down and saying, not all men.
Yeah.
We're still seeing politicians saying, oh, we need to talk about this, but not right now. It's not the right time. We're still seeing advocates saying, well, we need a lot more money to be able to do this. And we're still seeing governments saying, oh, well, you know, we don't have an endless pot of money in the budget. Nothing has changed in that. It's just people kind of have, it's taken the heat off it, I suppose, a little bit, because there's not so much of a face that everybody is angry at anymore. But that doesn't mean that we give up or we forget. It just means we work harder.
Well, I mean, Brittany Higgins is a perfect example in that she became reluctantly the face of this movement, because she basically just came out and said, I was raped in Parliament House by a staffer and I want something to be done about it. Now, unfortunately, due to many reasons, not much was done about it. And her treatment from some press, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne, has been pretty deplorable. Do you think her treatment from when she did, from the initial complaint that she made to her boss and beyond, do you think that puts people in a bit of a different mindset to want to make those complaints further down the line?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like with Brittany Higgins' case, it's very important to say that nobody has been found guilty and that the court case was abandoned because of the impact that it could have on Ms. Higgins' health. And so then there is no guilt. There has been absolutely no proof in this. And it's important to say that, you know, from a legal perspective, but also from an accuracy perspective. But the treatment of a woman who came forward and said, this happened to me, who raised her accusations, I think has really terrified a lot of people, because we're a couple of years on from this. All of the court action in that sphere is not happening. It's over. And she is still being torn apart because of, you know, workplace agreements that were made between the Commonwealth and her, and people thinking whether or not she deserves that, people raising, you know, her reasons for speaking up with her allegation. And all of it just comes together to tell people who have experienced or have allegations of their own to stay quiet. Because where is the benefit in coming forward if you think that you're going to be torn apart like this, if your life is going to be absolutely ripped apart like this, to the point where jackets that somebody is wearing are being questioned in the press? It's just absolute bullshit. And it again speaks to this whole idea that, you know, women have paths and men have bright futures. And we always seem to try to weigh those up, and it always seems to be the women who suffer here, who are sacrificed, you know, as we decide what is right and wrong.
Yeah.
We have the court system for that. the court system didn't work in this particular case for this particular case. It doesn't mean, though, that people should be silent in speaking up about their own experiences and what they have said happens to them. It doesn't mean that we find everybody guilty or that we have, you know, the court of public opinion. What it means is that we take those allegations seriously, we put them through the proper processes, and we provide as much support as possible. And I don't think that that's what happened in this case. And I think it's done real damage in terms of survivors coming forward and saying, here is my story.
Yeah. Now, if we switch to a little bit of current politics, our mate Albanese is in Perth at the moment, or in Western Australia. How do you think the government has gone over the last year since their election result?
Well, I think the honeymoon is absolutely over, and I think people have just kind of gone, okay, well, it's been almost a year now. There's a lot of problems, and we need you to start coming up with solutions to those problems. And to their credit, they have started, on the ground running. Parliament can be a weird place. It can sometimes feel like it takes a while to kind of whir up the machine and get everything working. It's not what this government really started with. It kind of felt like it started in the middle.
Yeah.
But there is a huge cost of living crisis, and we're not seeing a lot of relief for that. There are huge issues around energy on the East Coast. You guys don't need to worry about that so much because you made smart decisions, 10, 15 years ago. But there's huge problems with that. There are, problems on the international stage. There are problems when it comes to wage growth.
Yeah.
There are all of these little bubbling problems. And I think people are just kind of going, so when are we actually going to start seeing some answers? And that's the quagmire that the government finds themselves in now. They may not necessarily have made the mess, but they said they were going to be the ones to clean it up. And people are kind of like, well, the party's over. Time to get your brushes out.
Yeah. So the quagmire any new government sort of faces, and quickly they become not a new government, and they become just the government, and they have to get down to business and make things happen. Albanese seems to be putting a lot of political stock into The Voice, which is 100% completely understandable. From your standpoint in Canberra and talking to people within Parliament House, is it too much stock, or is it justified?
The people who are in support of it feel like it is justified because it's a conversation that has been happening well before he took up the, residence in the lodge. And it's something that, should have probably been progressed quite a few years ago. Where the, mess has come from is that people have lots of different opinions, and that is fine. People are always going to have lots of different opinions on it. But some of those opinions are starting to muddy the waters about what the actual voice is or not. And I'm not talking about people who have legitimate concerns about, what it means for Indigenous people's sovereignty, the progression of treaty and those other elements of the Uluru Statement of the Heart. But some of what the opposition is doing, just, saying we want more detail, more detail, more detail, has kind of become the chant rather than people actually listening to what the voice is and what it could be. And I think that's what the problem is, because whoever is going to win that argument in terms of like what the public is paying attention to is going to probably dictate a lot of how this voice coverage and referendum plays out. But I will say the big difference between this referendum and many others that we have seen in the past is that younger people don't tend to vote according to political party. They tend to vote by issue.
Yeah.
So they're not rusted on. And a political party telling them what to do doesn't necessarily have influence. They're going to, feel how they feel about the issue, talk to people and vote that way. And we saw that with the marriage equality debate as well. I think it surprised a lot of people just, in certain areas, just how strongly they were in favour of marriage equality. And that's because of younger voters.
I assume any time something currently that doesn't go 50-50, there's an element of surprise, because that's what we assume politically things are going to do. They're going to go straight down the line 50-50. But on an issue such as this, then perhaps people shift away from what their political leanings are and vote their conscience in a sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of grey areas in politics, and sometimes us in the political sphere and political reporters included forget that and paint it as black and white when it's not.
Yeah. So, Amy, do you have another book in you? A book on lazy cats, perhaps?
I think the many annuals on lazy cats and also cats as our masters and how lucky we are to live in their world and serve them. But I'm actually looking at writing about the politics of civility and how people use this concept of niceness and civil conversation pretty much just to keep us quiet and to keep us from speaking up. So I'm sort of examining why this happens and who is allowed seats at the tables of power and how we can do more to listen to some of those voices that are not quite so nice.